lament as a virgin mourning in sackcloth for the husband of her youth. Lament. Joel 1, verse 8, from the 2003 version of Yours Truly, our daily scripture for today, little children. What do we have now that we're going to do for today? Oh, yeah, I was going to tell you. I was going to tell you before I forgot that I had something in my throat, like it felt like I was getting a bug, catching some kind of bug or infection, right? So just because I couldn't swallow normally exactly the way, you know, there was something in my throat. I could just feel it. But I took 10 grams of vitamin C, 11 actually, I think. Yeah, including a slow release, but I took 10 fast release ascorbate. Grams of ascorbate, which is quite a lot. And so I know that I can't take any more because once you get to the point where the vitamin C is not needed to destroy the virus, then it goes all the way through your system and reaches your bowel, your colon. When it reaches your colon, you have a problem with diarrhea. So I've had the diarrhea for a while now, so I know I can't take any more vitamin C no matter what. So hopefully I'm not going to get sick now. I never have since I've started using vitamin C in this way. But in our study for today, in chapter 9, paragraph 3 now, the Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express, there's a photograph of the Pillar of Gudea from the Department, look at that, of Oriental Antiquities in the Louvre. What a remarkable thing that is. It looks like it's a four-part pillar, like, you know, they're all placed up against each other, and then there's a piece in the middle of them that is convex on all four sides. To Sargon, of whom we said that our modern zodiac has come down to us at least in part due to him, the Semitic nature of his language appears to make comfortable the assignment to him of the name of Belus, and equally well to his sons. Reference number one, Bel mythology, Wikipedia. Sargon's daughter, according to Wikipedia's article on the Semitic moon god Sin, was the high priestess of Sin at Ur. In Haran was another sanctuary of this god Sin, and it was another city after Ur, where the biblical Abram did live. That is, Haran was a city where the biblical Abram lived after he lived in Ur. Gudea, son-in-law of Urbaba, ruled the eastern parts close to Ur at Lagash. At the time when one of Urbaba's daughters was holding the office of En-priestess of Nana in Ur, the name Nana being the Sumerian name for the moon god Sin. The unique prestige of this position assures us that Gudea was in a position of singular authority at this time. Because one of his daughters was holding the En-priestess position. With the name Nana, furthermore calling to light, with the name Ninus closely related, the Sumerian origin of Gudea's name is connected to the long-held account of Belus, Babylonian king, lastly succeeded by his only quote-unquote son, Ninus. Right. because the daughter of Gudea, or sorry, no, one of Urbaba's daughters, actually, right, was holding the position of end priestess of Nana in Ur at the time of Gudea, because Gudea married one of the daughters of Urbaba. So during the time of Gudea, or Chedorlaomer, as we've identified him, this god Nana was still very prominent in that area of around Ur, the city of Ur, U-R spelled. Nana is, as we talked about before, apparently related to the name Kainan too. So it could be something to do with ancestor worship. It's possible there's a connection there, but we haven't really investigated that too much. So there was a connection of Gudea with the name of Nana, and also therefore with the name Ninus, possibly, but we know that Gudea, interestingly, was the son-in-law of Urbaba, and Gudea was a much more famous personage, right? He was immensely famous because we have a lot of his statues nowadays and so on that were found, and the date back to 2200 BC and even before that. But Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, the person whom we identify with this person, Gudea, so we say Gudea is the analog of Chedorlaomer. But Chedorlaomer, as a conqueror of Anshan in Elam in his sixth year, or rather Gudea was the one who we know conquered Anshan in Elam in his sixth year. But Chedorlaomer is the king of Elam, so I mean, in the Bible. So I mean, we have a lot of beautiful ways of proving, or beautiful connections, I guess we should say. Chedorlaomer, Genesis 14:1, king of Elam. So, you know, and the explanation for how he became king of Elam was that he conquered it. And that's talked about also in the book of Jasher, I believe, isn't it? I mean, we've talked about that before. Let's see. Where's the book of Jasher? Where are you? Is this it? Or is this the book of Jubilees? I think it's the book of Jasher. Right. Well, I don't know yet. Yeah, it is. It is. So look up Chedorlaomer. That's 12. We need 13. Jasher 13. Right. Then we see Chedorlaomer. Look up the word Elam in the book of Jasher. Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. The book of Jasher, chapter 13, verse 11. Right there. The cities of the plain revolted from the power of Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. Right. But it talked about Chedorlaomer went to the land of Elam and reigned over it. In verse 13, that's the crucial part there, because he had to conquer it. So he was called the king of Elam, but this in verse 11 was referring to the fact that he later became king of Elam when he conquered it. Because at the time, in verse 13, it says Chedorlaomer was at that time, this is the book of Jasher 13, verse 13, Chedorlaomer was at that time one of the princes of the hosts of Nimrod. So he wasn't the king of Elam at that time, but he went to the land of Elam and reigned over it, it said later in that verse. We've got enough evidence to say this is the same person, Gudea and Chedorlaomer, because Gudea was also recorded as having conquered Anshan in Elam in his sixth year. which we just read, but I misread it in the paragraph. If I should just read the sentences. It says, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, has an analog in Gudea, who, as a conqueror of Anshan in Elam in his sixth year, was king of Elam. And Jasher 13:13 says, Chedorlaomer took Elam during the time of his rebellion against his lord. In brackets, Belus, which was when Abraham was 65 years old. Thus, in 2141 BCE, Abraham at that time was still called Abram when he was 65 years old. But in our chronology, when Abraham was 65 years old, which is when it happens in the book of Jasher, unbelievably perfect alignment here, in the, because it's the 10th year of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan that these things happen in verse 12. Of chapter 13 of the book of Jasher, 13:12 of Jasher says, in the 10th year of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan, there was war between Nimrod, king of Shinar, and Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. Right? And he wasn't yet king of Elam at that point, but Chedorlaomer, or he became king of Elam, and then there was a war, right? But Chedorlaomer was at that time one of the princes of the host of Nimrod, in verse 13, and he went to the land of Elam and reigned over it. Okay, and then, so at that time, that was the 10th year of Abram's dwelling in Canaan, and we know from earlier on in the 58th year of his dwelling, or of his 58th year of his life, in the book of Jasher, I think it's where it is. Let's find it here. He came to the land of Canaan, verse 6, right? There's one place in here where it says he was 50 years old, because it's a misprint, because later on it says he was 55 when he came, because in here it says after 3 years of dwelling there, in verse 9, it was the 58th year of his life, of Abram's life. So 55 was the age when he came there, his 10th year of living there. Do the math, 55 and 10 is 65 years old. And that would be, in our chronology, 2141. It's just exactly. And all of these things, I had to calculate them over and over and over and over and over, just because I couldn't believe how accurately everything worked out, and I didn't want to make a mistake. So 2206, which is the birth date of Abram in our chronology, 2206 minus 65, 2141, which is exactly the year when the Assyrian kingdom is born in our chronology. And that was when also Chedorlaomer took Elam, which is exactly when he became so powerful that he could take or conquer Elam. And so in the 10th year, it says, I mean, it's so perfect, the alignment of our chronology with the book of Jasher. It's absolutely perfect, and it didn't have any work to be done. I didn't need to do any work to make it align. That was the part that was so confirmatory. And in the 10th year of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan, there was war between Nimrod, king of Shinar, and Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. And Nimrod came to fight with Chedorlaomer and to subdue him. For Chedorlaomer was at that time one of the princes of the hosts of Nimrod, and when all the people at the tower were dispersed, and those that remained were also scattered upon the face of the earth, Chedorlaomer went to the land of Elam and reigned over it and rebelled against his lord. And in those days when Nimrod saw that the cities of the plain had rebelled, he came with pride and anger to war with Chedorlaomer. And Nimrod assembled all his princes and subjects, about 700,000 men, and went against Chedorlaomer, and Chedorlaomer went out to meet him with 5,000 men, and they prepared for battle in the valley of Babel, which is between Elam and Shinar. And it was in the 15th year of Abram's dwelling in the land of Canaan, which is the 70th year of the life of Abram, that the Lord appeared to Abram in that year, and he said to him, I am the Lord who brought thee out from Ur-Kasdim to give thee this land for an inheritance. The book of Jasher, chapter 13, verses 12 to 14 and 17. Now, the part about the tower and the scattering of the people, people at the tower, implying the Tower of Babel, and this is implying Nimrod. This is the time of Nimrod. Well, that's incredibly unlikely, because how could there have been, you know, I mean, this is 2200 BC, a fact that we verified by many other methods. But, I mean, it doesn't work in our chronology at all. But the Book of Jasher is not one of the inspired books. It's not a book that claims any inspiration from God, so we don't have to believe that it's correct when it talks about... And there are many other things in the Book of Jasher that we don't believe are correct, so we don't have to believe that this is the time of the Tower of Babel here. So that part we can ignore if we, you know, if we want to, in other words. But there are people who believe that, you know, that the deluge occurred in 2300 BCE or something, and that this event of the Tower of Babel was later than 2200. So for them, this would possibly work well, but that would mean that it's just not right, right? Because Abraham wasn't alive at the time of the Tower of Babel. Peleg was the one who was a very great ancestor. He lived long before Abram. I mean, Abram was born in 2206, and Peleg was... Where is that descendancy? Well, we can look at the Bible, right? Just look at the Bible. Chapter 10, you see how many generations there are between Peleg and Abram when you know it's wrong. It's just false what they're saying in the Book of Jasher. To Shem, there were sons born, right? There was Arpachshad. He was the father of... We're going to insert Cainan there, because it really doesn't matter if we do or not. And Cainan was the father of Shelah, and Shelah was the father of Eber. And he was the father of Peleg. Now, after Peleg is where we want to know about, okay? Peleg was the father of... We've got to look for it. It's later on in the next chapter. This is the history of Shem. Genesis 11, verse 10. So we're going to jump down to Peleg. And Peleg was living for 130 years in the Septuagint, but it says here he lived for 30 years, then he became father to Reu. But let's just ignore the age, because it's wrong according to the Septuagint. So just say Peleg, father of Reu, Reu, the father of Serug, verse 20. Serug, father of Nahor, verse 22. Nahor, the father of Terah, and Terah was the father of Abram. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 generations between Peleg and Abram. So the Tower of Babel was not in Abram's time. It was in Peleg's time, from what we know. Because in his days the earth was divided. So in the days of Peleg, if that's the time when the earth was divided, where does it say that? I think it says it in I'm not going to be... It's dangerous to be too sure, but it says here, Peleg. Yeah, Peleg. His name was Peleg because in his days, Genesis 10:25, the earth was divided. So you see, if that division there is talking about the dispersion of the people at the Tower of Babel, which we believe it is talking about, then it's not right that Abram lived at the same time as the Tower of Babel. It's just not right, because each generation was about 130 years long also. They just have, you know, somehow confused it terribly. And I found a wonderful forum where they were talking about the rebellion of one of these Jews who rebelled against Rome. You know, the Jews were always rebelling against Rome up until Rome destroyed Jerusalem. But even after that, they were still rebelling, actually, come to think of it. And because of the rebellion of this one particular Jew, the Jews didn't want the other Jews thinking that the Messiah had already come. So they changed the Masoretic text. Or what later became the Masoretic text was an altered version of what had been in the Septuagint, with the Septuagint being an older version that had been translated from Hebrew into Greek. So the Septuagint is the more reliable chronology, and that's what we've used in our... And that was what Jesus' disciples used, too. But that's what we've used for our chronology, the Septuagint. But, you know, even if there were only 30 years per generation, like they're claiming in the Masoretic, that would still be 150 years between, you know, the birth of Peleg and the time of Abram. And if the Tower of Babel was during the time of Abram, or if the dividing of the earth was during the time of Abram, why wouldn't it have mentioned that? Instead of it saying that the dividing of the earth was in the time of Peleg, in the days of Peleg, it says. Sounds like early days of Peleg, but even if not, why isn't that not the days of Abram? Okay, it just doesn't make sense. But of course, I mean, you could argue it all. Yeah, it's possible to argue it, but we're not interested in arguing with other people. I mean, that's the whole point, because there's so many completely different chronologies than the one we have, that we can't spend our time selectively or arguing at all with anyone. We can't argue selectively. We can't, you know, single out one particular chronology that's not ours and then try to argue against it, because that just... I mean, the more we argue against it, the closer we become to believing what they're saying. So we don't need that chronology at all. It's not consistent with anything that we've learned. And if we believed that much different chronology, we'd have to abandon our own vast reservoirs of knowledge that we've accrued because of our chronology. So we don't have to abandon our chronology at all. But verse 10, the name of the one was Peleg because in his days the earth was divided. What does it mean, in his days? That's the question, right? In his days. Okay, so he could have been, yeah. It's not clear. The Masoretic text is just not something that we want to get into, but what is the Septuagint? Let's find out what the Septuagint says in Genesis 10:25. That'd be nice to know, wouldn't it? Let's go Genesis 10:25. What does it say about Peleg's name? Phaleg was his name because in his days the earth was divided. Oh, I know another thing. We've got this marvelous resource, yeah. We've got this great resource. Now, I don't know if this will help us or not. I'm just remembering something from the Book of Waddell, I think it's in, where it talks about the... It's in the Book of Sothis, I think. So we have to find the Book of Sothis, first of all. There's Manetho. Eratosthenes. It's one part of these... different ancient records that we've investigated. The Old Chronicle. Book of Sothis is last on this list, I think. So there it is. This is it, maybe here. Book of Sothis. Yeah, so if you look at the Book of Sothis, it's phenomenal, because here on Waddell's, in Waddell's book on page 237, his book is called something like Manetho, a translation, or an English translation, something like that. And against page 237 of Waddell, Manetho, an English translation. And when you see this, wow. I'm going to go to 238 here. What do we see there? Yeah, it's on 238, page 238. Because it says in the 34th year of the rule of Arphaxad, and that's Arphaxad in the Bible, and the fifth year of Phaleg, or Peleg, the dispersion took place. So it was in the fifth year of Peleg. So that's like Peleg was very young. Either that, or you'd have to believe it was his fifth year of rule of some kind. But the coincidence is that in archaeology, Peleg was born in 2749 BCE. So his 50 years, 2749 minus 4, right? Just 2749 minus 4 gives us the 50 year. 2749 minus 4 is 2745. That's why we said the dispersion was in 2745, right? Because of that particular thing here. Because it said it was in its fifth year. But we shouldn't have said that, probably, because this is not a reliable statement. But the other thing is, it was in the 34th year of the rule of Arphaxad. And the rule of Arphaxad began at the death of Shem, we would believe, which was in 2780, because Arphaxad was the son of Shem. And then his son was Cainan, right? But he was the son of Shem. So when Shem died, he became, you know, elder, heir, if you will, of the authority of his father. He became the one who inherited that authority at the death of Shem in 2780. So 2780, if we subtract 34, get 2746, which is very close to 2745. So that, because of those two statements that were made there in this Book of Sothis, it was convincing enough for yours truly to decide that 2745 was the dispersion. It's hard to say when it was based on all the other facts, but this seems to, I mean, it's hard to say precisely where it was, but it seems like that's a very good estimate of when it occurred, right? And also, it said it was the general cosmic year 2776, right? It says from the general cosmic year 2776. So it's mentioning this general cosmic year, which is the year of the world, supposedly, which from Adam in our chronology is 5550 minus 2776 or so, give or take a year. So 2774 would be from that time, which is that's the eclipse of Nimrod in our chronology, right? And then, it's quite remarkable, or we could have said 2775 if we said it was, you know, it was the 2776th year of the world from Adam, in other words, from the creation of Adam. So we would get the year 2775, you see. From that, we can't really subtract 30. Well, we could. Wait a minute. Let's do it again. 2775. Or even, let's say 2776 again, minus 33. What do we get? Do we want that? Wait a minute. What am I doing here? Yeah. Minus, let's say, 33 years. We'd get 2743. If we count the rule of Arphaxad as after 33 years after that date. But that's not really what it says there. It says the general cosmic year 2776 in which the dispersion took place, right? So it doesn't, but it says in which the dispersion took place in the 34th year of the rule of Arphaxad. So it says from the general cosmic year, right, in which the dispersion took place in the 34th year. See, it's hard to say what they're really saying, whether we should subtract from the 2776 or whether it's saying that 2776, year of the world, or 2774 BCE, in other words. It's hard to say whether they're saying 2774 BCE is the time of the dispersion, which, you know, is not exactly we could have gone that route, but I because I discovered this or found this statement after I'd already determined a large portion of the chronology, you know, and then and because most of these records are vastly corrupt, like they're immensely corrupt, there's no real accurate record anywhere. So I couldn't take this as being of a higher authority to the work I'd already done, so I just tried to find a way that it could be interpreted so that we could get a number pretty close to the, I guess, I don't know, close to what is the question. No, I know, close to the 50-year Peleg. That's what I was trying, because the 50-year Peleg was 2745 in our chronology, the 50 year of his life. Now we just look at footnote 2. What does it say? In his days was the earth divided, Peleg, it mentions, Genesis 10:25. That's it. Okay, that's basically what it says. Right, so this 50 year Peleg, yeah, if we interpret that differently also, we would get a different result. But because it seems like it's perfectly right, because we have the death of Shem in 2780, that's the reason. And that aligns with the 50-year Peleg when we take the, you know, 35 years it actually is after 2780 to get to 2745, which is the 50-year Peleg. It's such a good alignment that we therefore took... we took this year, 2776, as being the year from which we, or actually we didn't even use that year. We used the year of the death of Shem, 2780. It's interesting, but the year, the reason we assumed why they, was the reason why they invoked the year 2776, the general cosmic year, 2776, was because that was the year of the eclipse of Nimrod, because that was the same year of the as the eclipse of Nimrod in our chronology. Then we said that's enough validation for that number, and we didn't use that number to determine the year of the dispersion. We used the 34th year of Arphaxad, but more importantly, the 5th year of Phaleg, or Peleg. So that's it for today's study. A lot of research was done, though, on a lot of different things before we arrived at the chronology. It's December 10th, 2024 of the Common Era, and it's 12:50 hours Canadian Eastern Time. Once again, I'm Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching, and I love you very much. In my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star saying bye for now, and that was The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express, Chapter 9, Paragraph 3 today. That was rather important and fairly lengthy, too. And, yeah, I love you very much. It's going to be, it's cold right now. I just had a shutdown on something, and I'll work on it. Bye for now.